All right, we are going to start. We do not have quorum yet. Once we do, I will interrupt Representative Drazkowski to get some housekeeping things done. But I would appreciate, Representative Drazkowski, if you can explain your bill for us, please.
Which bill are we on, Madam Chair?
You're on House File 1030. We're going to start with that one.
2073?
1030. So this is the allowing the employees to opt out of the state-paid insurance.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members, I have a constituent. He's with me today. He's unable to speak because he's got a health care issue.
Okay.
That he's recovering from. He and likely many other Minnesotans are currently unable to opt out of health insurance coverage benefits through CGIP. And what this bill simply does is it says that state employees need to be allowed the ability to opt out, and secondly, that a form needs to be made available by the government for them to conveniently do so. That's the bill, Madam Chair. It delivers savings to your committee and delivers, most importantly, flexibility, savings for state employees who don't need to be covered by our health care benefits, and likely and obviously savings to the general fund.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Ms. Roberts, do you want to walk us through the fiscal note, please?
Madam Chair, members, you'll see on the front page of the fiscal note there's a total savings estimated in 2018 of $2.098 million. That's for all funds. And then you can see the breakdown for other funds versus the general fund. And then in fiscal year 2019, savings of $4.5 million total. And so the total biennial savings is about $6.6 million. And that is from the reduction in medical premiums for the employees that would choose not to have coverage.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Roberts. Members, are going to call the State Government Finance Committee to order. In your packets is the March 9th minutes. Representative Green, you want to move those minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll move the minutes.
Representative Green moves the minutes for March 9th. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the minutes are adopted. I'm going to move House File 1030 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus State Government Finance Bill. Representative Drazkowski, you said your testifier cannot speak at this time. Do you have anybody else that wishes to speak or...
No, I don't, Madam Chair, and I would also just mention that my testifier is one of the category of people who would benefit from this, and he is a disabled vet and is eligible for and enrolled in TRICARE, but with it being paid for by the federal government, he's still unable to opt out.
Okay. All right. Is there anybody that wishes to testify to this bill? Members, questions on this bill? Representative Kunesh-Poldeen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. So how many people would you estimate would opt out? How many state employees would opt out?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative, the fiscal note suggests 4,000 was the number of people that they thought might be eligible, and then their estimate of those 4,000 was about 600 would exercise the opt-out. I would think that's a pretty conservative estimate, and actually savings might be greater than presented here.
Representative. Any other questions, members? All right. I'm going to renew my motion that House File 1030 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus State Government Finance Bill. Representative Drazkowski, you have your House File 2073. I'm going to... move that bill as well, and Representative Drazkowski to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 2073 is a bill that requires, that repeals the state campaign subsidy program. And members, if you remember, this is a program where taxpayers, when they file taxes, have the ability to check off on their form and designate up to $5 for themselves or $10 per household or per couple to be taken from the general fund, then from that designation, and then sent directly to a campaign. There's also a basic appropriation from the general fund as part of the subsidy program. So it's kind of a two-pieced approach to the campaign subsidy that comprises about $3,000 to $5,000 in a check directly to campaigns for all of our campaigns, our challengers, future people that will run in our offices, statewide office holders and their challengers and others. So this is really viewed by the author as political welfare, Madam Chair, and I think the people of Minnesota, and I know this when I talk to others, believe that instead of us spending money on ourselves and our campaigns, we should be spending money or reducing the amount of money that we have by cutting taxes or maybe building our roads out. So those are kind of the two areas that I hear as a priority rather than having a self-serving approach like we have currently, one that actually has the money focused on the people of our state.
Okay. Is there anybody that wishes to testify on this bill? Members, questions to this bill? Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and not sure if it's to Representative Grasikowski or not, but looking at the fiscal note, and it says that it's going to free up management time, but it doesn't appear that there's any savings in FTE. And, you know, a lot of times when we get these, there would be, if there's going to be less time invested, you would think that there'd be some FTE. I'm not disputing that I like the bill. It's just a matter of the fiscal note. Have some question as to why there wasn't any savings in FTE if indeed this is a program that's consuming some time now.
Mr. Sigurdsson, welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Good afternoon. Jeff Sigurdsson, Executive Director of the Campaign Finance Board. Excuse me, I'm afraid I have the same health concerns that well, the other testifiers had. The trade-off here is that we don't believe it was the staff savings would be less than a measurable amount of time in terms of trying to reduce overall staff costs of the agency. Excuse me. Sorry for that answer.
Mm-hmm. Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I was just curious, how much time did it take? I guess as I've looked at these things, and sometimes it seems like there's more staff time needed when we're adding cost, but here we're decreasing cost, and it would seem to me that there should be some type of an offset. I can understand if it maybe takes only an hour or two a month or something, but I'm just curious how much time it was taking.
Mr. Sigurdsson?
Madam Chair, Representative. The part of the issue is, again, it's you know, a staff of nine people. There isn't any one individual who dedicates their entire time to this program. So eliminating the public subsidy program wouldn't eliminate that position. It would just basically be freeing up time to spend on other parts of the program, other parts of campaign finance, lobbying and economic interest disclosure. So, again, we thought it was a matter of reallocating how that resource would be used. There would not be sufficient time to eliminate a position and have that sort of position savings for the agency.
Representative Vogel.
I guess that's it, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any other questions, members? Seeing none, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 2073 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus state government finance bill. Thank you, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Representative Barr, I saw her come in. I'm going to move. Representative Barr, I'm going to move the House File 1418 be referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee. To your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just for the record and in keeping with first time up in this committee, I did bring some treats which are going to be coming around momentarily. So,
well, that gets you bonus points for sure.
So thank you again, Madam Chair and representatives. The bill before you today is House File 1418, and it's the Minnesota Lottery technical policy bill, and this bill seeks to accomplish two things. First, it would remove obsolete language from statute that deals with awarding lottery prizes to persons under the age of 18. And secondly, it seeks to clarify the lottery's statutory budget cap as it relates to the lottery's operating expenses, more specifically pension reporting under Rule 68 from the Governmental Accounting Standards Board. With me today are representatives from the lottery that can further explain the bill in more detail. And with that, with your permission, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Kwapik.
Kwapik, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's great to be back in front of the committee. For the record, my name is Chris Kwapik, and I am the legislative liaison for the Minnesota Lottery. As Representative Barr mentioned, House File 1418 is the lottery's technical policy bill and seeks to address two issues. I'll begin with the first issue in Sections 1 and 3 of the bill. In the state of Minnesota, it's always been illegal for any person under the age of 18 to purchase a lottery ticket. However, prior to 1994, a person under the age of 18 could claim certain lottery prizes. In 1994, the legislature decided to end this practice, and all prize claimants had to be over the age of 18. They amended Minnesota Statute 349A.12 to prohibit minors from purchasing or claiming a lottery ticket or prize. In the 1994 bill, however, there was an oversight which forgot to repeal a reference to this under 18 provision that governed how to pay a person to pay a prize to a person under 18. Our bill simply cleans up this reference by removing it. To be clear, the lottery has not paid out a prize to a person under the age of 18 since 1994 and has been in full compliance with the law ever since. The second issue our bill addresses is in Section 2. In 2012, the Government Accounting Standards Board, or GASB, issued Statement 68, which required that beginning in fiscal year 2015, all government entities must provide in their year-end statements measurement and disclosure for employer-provided pensions. The goal of GASB 68 was to increase transparency in these statements. The lottery does not have an issue with the disclosure, with this disclosure in general. However, our financial division has concerns about the way this disclosure relates to our legislatively mandated operating budget cap. As members may recall, our agency is unlike other state agencies in our means of funding. We do not receive general funds, but instead operate from proceeds from the sale of our tickets. Every 2 years, the legislature sets a cap for what the lottery can spend on its operations, which includes things like salaries, benefits, office leasing, advertising and promotions, and other supplies and materials. For the last 2 years, the cap has been set at $31 million. The concerns that we have are possible market fluctuations on these pension liabilities that could have a perceived impact on the lottery's bottom line when it comes to the operations cap. These fluctuations can result from a change in actuarial assumptions used to calculate the pension liability or from changes in the performance of the stock market from expectations from year to year. To be clear, this is a non-cash item. We do not put money in or take money out, and there's no impact on the lottery's or its employees' contributions to MSRS run by the state of Minnesota. If members wouldn't mind turning their attention to a handout with our should be in your packets with our logo on top, kind of gives a little bit more of an example of the scenario that we're talking about. As you can see in fiscal years 15 and 16, fluctuations actually showed less liability for the lottery, which resulted in lower reported operating expenses. It actually makes us seem a little bit more efficient than we are, which, in all honesty, we wouldn't mind, but we do want to be as transparent as possible. Our concern is the hypothetical situation in FY18, where fluctuations could go in the opposite direction. And even though our actual costs would be under the cap, our bottom line would give the perception that we are, in fact, over the cap. It's impossible to budget for these fluctuations because we don't receive these liability numbers until after the fiscal year ends. So for fiscal year 17, which ends June 30th of this year, we won't receive these figures until sometime between July and October. Therefore, it's our proposal that this pension liability line item be defined in statute to not be calculated as an operational cost, so as to create further clarity on our actual expenses. It's the lottery's intent to make sure that our end-of-the-year annual reporting is accurate and that a sudden fluctuation in a pension liability adjustment does not make it appear as if the agency has overspent the statutorily mandated operating cap. And just as a side note to members, census figure is not an actual expense. It has no impact on the lottery's contributions back to the state of Minnesota. So with that, Madam Chair, I also have Joe Paul with me, who's the Chief Financial Officer for the lottery, and we're prepared to take any questions that the committee may have.
Before we do that, is there anybody else that wishes to testify to this bill? Okay. Members, Representative Nash.
My question was answered when the cupcakes were passed around.
We're going to pause here a moment. Members, any other questions at all? Chair O'Driscoll, did you want to comment on the pension piece?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kwapik's characterization, to the best of our knowledge, is right. I'm not questioning his interpretation. It is something that's been afforded to other agencies within the state of Minnesota, and they're just looking for that same kind of language that would avoid any confusion in the future, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. I'm going to renew my motion then that House File 1418 be referred to the General Register. Members, we have Representative Detmer. Oh, I'm sorry. And all those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed. All right, you're on your way.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Detmer.
Madam Chair, committee.
Welcome to the committee. Representative Detmer moves that House File 127 be laid over for possible inclusion in the state government finance bill.
And
Representative Detmer.
And Madam Chair, I have the A1 amendment.
The A1 amendment.
Just to get it in the form that I want.
Yep. Representative Detmer moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Detmer, to your bill as amended.
Yeah, I'm going to just give a brief introduction here. The Twin City Public Television, TPA, is seeking some funding, $650,000, as the A1 amendment did for us, for the state to help ensure that they can fully fund a project they are working on for the Minnesota and the Vietnam War. The project would be rolled out in conjunction with a new Ken Burns documentary series about the Vietnam War. And I'd like to turn it over to our speakers, our testifiers.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Bill Straczynski with Libby Law Firm, and I am here representing the Friends of Minnesota Public Television. Occasionally, legislation comes along that hits you full square. House File 127, for me, is such a bill. I want to thank Representative Detmer for bringing this legislation forward, because those of us who served and who were around in the 1960s and 70s are forever affected by the events that took place. Please indulge me a bit of personal perspective as I set the stage for the testimony you're about to hear. We were soldiers once and young, and the past is very much alive within us. Issues surrounding the Vietnam War, both at home and abroad, affected the very fabric of our democracy and dramatically impacted veterans and citizens alike. For many of us, reconciliation is an ongoing and lifelong process. In December 1966, I received a very official-looking letter. The letter started out as follows: "Greetings from the President of the United States." Wow, I'd just been drafted. Soon thereafter, olive drab became my personal new favorite color, and I learned several lessons about life. During basic training, I volunteered to be trained as a medic. I was thinking of duty in the hospital in Germany, maybe Italy, but the army was thinking infantry Vietnam. There's a truism around that says the army is always right. And so my adventure began. I hate snakes. Holy smokes. Was that a cobra this Minnesota boy just killed with his machete? Does it ever stop raining? Why is it so hot? How many days left in country? Will I be brave? Will I make Mom and Dad proud? Are we really patriots? Lord, don't let me fall asleep on my watch. Why do firefights seem like organized chaos with lots of noise? Did someone yell medic? Where's my morphine? Where the hell's the dust off? Why are night ambush patrols full of terror and frequent mayhem? Remember to pull the pin before you throw. Why are they protesting? Why do they call me baby killer? Why are they spitting at me? These are just a few of the questions that were in my mind during my tour in Vietnam in 1967 and 1968 with the infantry. And they reflect my personal experiences when I return home. I guarantee similar thoughts and experiences occurred to every member of the Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, and Coast Guard. And Coast Guard served in Vietnam as well, and who served in the military during that period of time. This public television project, Minnesota Remembers Vietnam, will provide an opportunity for all Vietnam-era veterans and their families to tell our stories, to secure our dignity, and forever preserve the public's respect for those who served. Here to tell you more about this initiative is Mr. Jim Pagliarini, the CEO, President of Twin Cities Public Television.
Mr. Pagliarini, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you. My name is Jim Pagliarini, and I'm the president of Twin Cities PBS, but also here representing all of the public television stations in Minnesota. There are six stations that serve the state, and each of us will be involved in executing the project I'm going to talk with you about. I really appreciate the support of Bill and as a colleague as we develop this. As you can imagine, Bill's personal experience really has inspired us to do something significant for the Vietnam veterans of Minnesota. And what precipitated this is that I think we have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity before us. In the fall of this year, Ken Burns and PBS are going to be releasing a 19-hour definitive documentary on the Vietnam era, not just the war itself, but what our country went through, what it was like for our veterans to come home. And his series is going to ignite a conversation in this country about that stage in this country's history. And it's going to awaken many of the memories, some of which you heard from Bill today, all across this country. As we in public broadcasting began to think about this, we felt that we had an incredible opportunity to honor and recognize Minnesota's Vietnam veterans this fall, along with the premiere of this series. So we've put together a project, the scale of which is something unlike anything we've done in my 20-year history at Twin Cities PBS. The project's about a $2 million project, and we're seeking an appropriation and support from the state of $650,000 to support that roughly $2 million initiative. And we will make the commitment through our own budgets and private fundraising to round out that number and realize the full vision. The project itself will have five components. First one, as I said, is the Ken Burns documentary. But while Ken Burns is telling a national story, stations all across Minnesota will also capture short video stories of Minnesota's Vietnam veterans to intersperse during Ken Burns' documentary. And this is going to be seen by millions and millions of people. The second component of the project is that we are in production now, actually, to do a documentary which will air in Minnesota but also will air nationally on the Hmong experience of the Vietnam War, the secret war in Cambodia. Ken Burns is not telling that story. We have, as you know, a large Hmong population and many elders who are still alive today who can offer firsthand knowledge and insights and memories of what that was like. It was like to fight in the war in support of the United States, to move into refugee camps, and then to be resettled in Minnesota and in other parts of the United States. The third component of our project is actually to take a few stories of Vietnam veterans and work with a theater group that will craft it into an actual theatrical play. We'll document that, broadcast the play, and offer the performances. The fourth component, which is primarily what we're seeking the state funding for, is to build what I think would be the equivalent of the Vietnam Memorial Wall for Minnesota, but on a digital platform. We call it the Story Wall. So imagine if you have ever been to the Vietnam Memorial in Washington and you actually could touch a name, and then that touching that name activated and took you in to see that individual, to hear his or her story, to see visual images of his or her memories of the Vietnam era. We hope to collect literally tens of thousands of stories like Bill's and capture them and preserve them on this story wall that will tell the story of Minnesota's Vietnam era. This will involve, as I said, every corner of the state. So outstate Minnesota stations, the funding will help to support that as well as within the Twin Cities. The final component that we imagine is about a year from now to hold an event at the state capitol to honor Minnesota's Vietnam veterans for their service and for their bravery. And it's a big project, one, as I said, that we have seldom undertaking anything of this scale, but we just have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to do something quite significant. The average age of the veteran who served in Vietnam is 68, so a lot of the stories are going to be lost if we don't capture them. And what we preserve on this digital story wall will be here for generations to come to remember. So we're very grateful for your consideration of this request, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay. I've got a couple of questions. So you're saying the digital story wall has the cost of the $650,000. Is that correct?
It's primarily that plus the state event.
Okay. And then you said that this is going to be aired nationally. So do you get funding from the other states then that are airing it, the other stations outside of Minnesota?
No, we don't.
Okay. And then you're just doing the fundraising for the other portion of it. What can you kind of catalog for me the $650,000 on the digital story wall? So how much is that for the actual seeking out the stories? How much is that for putting the website itself together? I assume you have like an itemization of that.
I could give you sort of scale estimates of that for you. So the actual web development work, which is quite substantial to build it, and if you can imagine creating a system where people can upload their videos and upload their stories and send them. So the web development cost is going to be somewhere around the $200,000 plus range. We'll probably need three or so full-time people to be able to curate those stories, and what I mean by curate them is capture them and tag them so that you could then have a searchable database for when people are going on the site to access that information. We plan to give each of the Minnesota public television stations $150,000 is going out to the outstate stations to support their work. And then we have a project team here that's kind of managing the whole enterprise. The event at the Capitol, I'm not sure, I'm estimating to be in the $50,000 to $60,000 range.
Talk to me a little bit more about the $150,000 to outstate stations to support their work. What does that mean? So what are they doing outside of the three to four people that are curating the stories and the work?
So they're doing it in their community. So there are five stations in addition to Twin Cities PBS. So each of the stations would get about a $30,000 grant to have the staff to be able to work in their communities, to bring people into their stations, to videotape the stories, to curate them, to tag them. So it's mostly the human resource and the production costs of acquiring the stories from those stations.
So then the three to four people that you're looking to curate the stories, are those for the metro area then?
It's the metro area, and then collecting all of the outstate stories as well and integrating them into our larger web platform.
And then for the $200,000 in web development, is that a quote that you've gotten from a web developer, or where does that amount come
from? It comes from our web development team of the estimated number of hours to be able to develop it. So we have web developers on staff that do this kind of work.
Okay. I see. Members, any questions? Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'd just like to thank Representative Dettmer for bringing this bill forward. it's really time to tell Minnesota's story in Vietnam and the veterans, and like you mentioned, a number of the veterans are getting a little older nowadays, and it was an extremely trying time in this country, and I think many of us in this room lived through that. It's history, and it's Minnesota history, and a lot of good people sacrificed their lives in Vietnam, and I think that for the younger generation that wasn't around then, I think this will be very valuable for them to see and understand, and particularly tying in it with Ken Burns, who I have the greatest respect for. I think it's an excellent opportunity to do this, and I think it'll be very well received. Thank you.
I also, getting back on the web development piece, mm-hmm. So those are people that you already have on staff now that currently do web development. So what would they be doing other than web development for this piece?
So I mean, part of how we support the staff is through project funding. So all of the national shows that we do, local shows that we do, there's always a budget item to recover the costs of your production and web development team. So we, you know, it's a staff that expands and contracts depending upon the amount of work that we do. So they would be presumably working on other projects, or we'd be seeking other projects to be able to use the web development team.
And then walk me through again just the piece. So you, the $150,000, about five stations, they get roughly $30,000. And you're saying that they will be curating the stories, but then after they curate the stories from Greater Minnesota, then they send it up to the 3 to 4 people that you have as FTEs for them to curate them as well?
For them to integrate it into our site. So they'll be, and you're, I mean, you're correct in, I think, parsing the words a little bit. The curating will happen at the local stations. We will still have an editorial review of it before it's published on the website. So we'll be taking stories from all over the state. The outstate stations will have done some curation and made some editorial decisions, but before they're published on the wall, our team still needs to review it, needs to look at it and make sure that it's appropriate to the editorial standards and the quality of the other content that's going on the site. So there's just another filter it needs to go through before we publish it on the wall.
Okay. Members, any other questions at all? Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. So I noticed down here on your piece of paper, it says that it can be used by educators and organizers. Will there be an education sort of curriculum already created for educators as a result of this project?
It's not contemplated.
Mr. Paglarini.
I'm sorry. It's not contemplated at this point. It'll be made available for teachers to use and to have access. I believe that's correct. Right? And so we don't have in the budget doing a curriculum for the wall.
Okay. And then
Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Thank you. In the digital story wall, will that also include the people from the secret war, so those of the Hmong that live in Minnesota that helped in that secret war to help support the United States?
Mr. Paglarini.
Yes, it will. And a very deliberate and intentional effort will to make sure we reach out to diverse communities. We've put together an advisory group of veterans that really are representative of all the different communities who had some experience in the Vietnam era.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? I have just one more. On the 3 to 4 people, so it looks like between the 3 to 4 people, you're about $250,000 that you're setting aside for that FTE cost. Do you have a breakdown? Is there like a supervisor? How does that work? Can you give us those details, or is that something that you've worked up yet?
We haven't worked that yet. We have on staff right now our executive producer or the project leader, Katie Carpenter, who's with us in the audience. And so she'll put together a team of two or three or four people underneath her to be able to do the curation, to coordinate the outreach activities. There's a lot of events associated with this as well. So we will be inviting people to the station, going out to the VA hospitals, working with schools, so it's a major outreach effort to collect all the stories. So it's one senior level person and probably, as I said, two or three people reporting into Katie who will do the outreach the editorial work, the curation, and then there's a team of a whole team of web people underneath that who then sort of take that content and publish it to the wall.
And Mr. Pagliarini, have you reached out to the Historical Society to see if they have some of this already in the can, or have you had conversations with them at all?
We've had conversations with the Minnesota History Center. They don't have a comprehensive collection of stories, the scale that we're talking about. We've also reached out to the University of Minnesota's Digital Archive Library and the Humanities Center as well. So we have a number of partners also just to be a part of this, but also to serve as the repository for the final work so that it can exist and live on beyond the one-year project where we'd be collecting, one-plus-year project where we'd be collecting the stories.
All right. I can't remember if I've asked this, so I'm going to make sure I'm covered. Is there anybody else that wishes to testify on this? Come on down.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Jerry Kaiser. I am a Vietnam combat veteran. I'm also the executive director of Minnesota Vietnam Veterans Charity. And we have been involved with this kind of project, trying to let everyone know what's going on. I did two tours in Vietnam. I was a helicopter machine gunner crew chief in the 1st Infantry Division and the 1st Aviation Brigade. And I did volunteer twice to go there. It was a grand experience that wasn't always pleasant. And in 2009, we put on a big program here at the state capitol. And this, again, would be an additional help to that because although I came back to the United States after two tours, I came back once wounded and was greeted quite well with in my home of in North Dakota by a two-star general, and my father was a colonel in the Army, and he happened to be there. But most of my friends and most of the Vietnam veterans that I know never got that kind of return. And this, many of them, I'm old, I'm 72, and most of them are younger than me, and some older. And they have not had that positive reinforcement that I did. After my second tour, I came back and went to college again, and I was incubated at the university and finished up another degree and got professional pilot's license. But this is an opportunity to go and find a lot more other individuals. A few years ago, we had the 1968 project where we got a Huey helicopter out here and put it at the History Center, and that has traveled around the country. But there are still many veterans that have still not come to grip to what they were. They've become, they're out there, but we need to talk to them more. As far as educational programs, the Vietnam Veterans of America that I was the president of for 4 years, there is programs. I've been talking out in the schools since 2001, many of the high schools and junior highs about the educational programs of what has been put out already. So this would be an adjunct to that and just a bigger expansion of it because in the event that we did in 2009, it was right out here at the state capitol. We had helicopter flyovers, another airplane that were involved in that conflict over 10 years. And this would just flow it out further into the state of Minnesota because even though we had 20,000 people or 15,000 people show up there, they weren't from all over the different counties and cities of the states. And I think this is just another, as long as we can get together with them, there are so many documentaries. I know I've given a couple of them talking about what my experiences was in my two tours, and I know a lot of other people. The University of St. Thomas has a lot of them. The University of Minnesota has a lot of them. And I just think this would be a great opportunity to honor those men and women who are, now they're retired, they're old, and they need the same kind of recognition that World War II and Korea veterans have got. right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kaiser. And Mr. Hughes?
Hi, my name is Mark Hughes, member of the committee, Chairman Sarah Anderson. Thanks for this opportunity. When I'm not here, I'm an executive producer and anchor of a TV show that's carried every once in a while on the Minnesota Channel. And I just want to make sure that every member on this committee understands how this TV game works. When they talk about the Minnesota Public Television Association, they have over at PBS Twin Cities a big master control area that can take feeds from any of those stations at any time, capture that information as it's happening, and put it on the air if they choose to do that. So while it's nice you say, take a look at the information from the History Center where they've got that dated material, that's nice to say that, but we want the stuff that is timely and dated, I think, and that's the way they're looking at it. And as far as hiring extra people to do the Internet web, those people are co-pilots. You can't have just one person do it. So, and I want to tell you that in the years I've been involved with public television, which I carry a small role over there, but they don't waste money. So this money will be well spent. And Mr. Jim Pellerini, our CEO, has spent 20 years plus over there, and he knows what he's doing. So please put your vote of confidence to him and the operation. Now, if there's any questions of me, I'll be glad to answer.
Members, are there any questions for Mr. Kaiser or for Mr. Hughes? Thank you. Mr. Johnson, can you come down? I have a question for you, too. Mr. Johnson, has the Department of Veteran Affairs been engaged in this process? Have you offered any of the information that the department has, or where is the department on this bill?
Madam Chair, Ben Johnson, Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Yes, we have met with Mr. Pellerini and his team. The commissioner is fully on board with this project, and we have been willing to support them in any manner necessary from this point going forward, dependent on the funding streams. We do have access to some pretty significant resources in terms of history and contacts within the veterans community, and we're fully on board with supporting this initiative.
Okay. Members, any questions for Mr. Johnson? All right. Thank you. Okay. Oh, and I got Representative Hughes. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Detmer, for bringing this bill, and to all the testifiers today. I really appreciate it. I think it's very important to give visibility to those who served during the Vietnam War, and I love the idea of the digital story wall, and just visualizing what that's going to look like and how it's going to bring stories to life. So I'm just really, I think that's just wonderful. I know a lot of Vietnam veterans and have heard a number of them speak to how they felt when they arrived home, and it wasn't bad. And I remember, I'm sure the tears were rolling down my face on a couple of occasions, and so were they on theirs. And just recently lost a friend who was in his mid to late 60s and who served in the Vietnam War. Dale was just a really awesome guy. I look forward to sharing with his wife, Nancy, about this project. I'm hopeful that this bill will be passed and signed into law. It's a great bill. Thank you.
Great. Representative Detmer, closing comments?
Well, just that, Madam Chair, and I think most of you know how passionate I am about military issues and the veterans issues and chairing the committee, but I graduated in 1969 from high school, and some of you are a lot younger than I am. And I think I went right down. I was going to enlist because my draft number was number 14. And my dad, a World War II veteran, he's still alive, lives in his home, and he talked me out of it. He said, go to college, because I had a scholarship to go to college. And I graduated from college in 1973. And if most of you know, in history, the draft was gone after 1973. I entered the service you know, after I got into teaching and coaching. It had always been in the back of my mind. And served 25 years in the Army Reserve and then was deployed for 20 months after 9/11. But knowing that my age group, the group that served in Vietnam, has always been in the back of my mind, and that this the education piece that is with this legislation is going to be good for young people, and not just for the young people, but for those that had served during this time to really be able to tell their stories. So I hope that we can get this through, and thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to have this hearing.
And we're going to renew Representative Detmers. He renews his motion that House File 127 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus State Government Finance Bill. Thank you, Representative Detmer. Representative Howe. I'm going to move that House File 2164 be laid over for possible inclusion in the State Government Finance Bill. Representative Howe, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's good to be back in one of my favorite committees, so thank you for that. And this bill, basically what it does is currently there's a charge on dependents to be interned at state veteran cemeteries, which is different than our federal cemeteries. Our federal veteran cemeteries, such as Fort Snelling Cemetery, charges nothing for for interning a dependent child or a spouse. Our state cemeteries charge $750. What this bill basically does is allows the funds from Support Our Troops. It allows the commissioner to use those funds to offset the fees for burying a spouse if application is made, and it directs the commissioner to make the policies and to make that happen. So it actually is no cost to our current state government, but it does take funds out of the Support Our Troops funds, our SOT funds, to make that happen. And with that, I have Mr. Johnson here from the MDVA to testify.
Mr. Johnson, do you have a few words you want to add?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Ben Johnson, Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And we appreciate the Representative Howe working with us on developing a bill that we can support. We're happy to develop the policies and procedures to make this happen.
Great. Members, any questions? Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had heard a similar bill to this earlier this session in the Veterans Affairs Division, and I think that we unearthed some things that really need to be looked at in this, and I really want to thank Representative Howe for bringing that forward and reflecting those things in this bill, and particularly members I'm referring to as the section on the costs associated with this, and that there is no real policy statement at this point by the Commissioner's office as to how the waivers may be taking place or the fee structure on this, and developing a fee structure for either in-ground burial or columbarium burial or mausoleum burial, if that becomes an option in one of the state cemeteries, there's clearly different costs on that, and if there's going to be a waiver of fees, we should certainly need to know the cost of doing that. So I do laud you very, very much, Representative Howe, for bringing this version forward. So I think it's doing what you want to do, and it's doing it in a very respectful way.
Representative Howe, any comment?
No, Madam Chair. I think this was a good compromise. It was. I think it makes good use of funds that are already there and to support those families. So
there's peace in the valley is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Okay. Is there anybody that wishes to testify to this bill? Any other questions, members? If not, I renew my motion that House File 2164 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the State Government Finance Bill. Thank you, Representative Howe. Good to see you. Members, we have our very last bill, Representative Vogel. Representative Vogel moves House File 1936 be laid over for possible inclusion in the State Government Finance Bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and committee. This is a housekeeping bill for MMB, and I'm going to turn it over to the testifier to explain the nuances of it.
Mr. Pollard, can you walk us through?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is John Pollard, Legislative Director at Minnesota Management and Budget. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing House File 1936, and thank you to Representative Vogel for offering this technical housekeeping bill. On behalf of MMB, there is no fiscal cost to the bill before you. 75 of the 80 sections in this bill update language regarding state payments to make it more reflective of modern business practices. Most of our state statutes were created at a time when the only way to issue a payment was by a state warrant. A warrant is a paper document that functions similar to a check. The main difference is that checks are cleared by a bank and warrants are cleared by the state treasury. In today's electronic age, most of state payments are issued by electronic funds transfers. During fiscal year 2016, over 90% of our payments were issued electronically instead of by paper warrant. This proposal will update statutory references to acknowledge other electronic forms of payment by changing the word warrant to payment. There are five other sections in this bill that address other topics, and I'll go through those quickly for you. Section 4 is a statute that authorizes the state to make payments in advance for certain types of goods and services. The proposed change will allow other types of prepayments when advance payment discounts are provided for other costs that are customarily paid for in advance. Section 9 updates a reference to a statute that was previously renumbered. Section 13 clarifies that the state is not liable to redeem a warrant that has been determined to be invalid and void. The purpose of this is to prevent unnecessary disputes and litigation. We have on occasion been taken to conciliation court by a third-party check-cashing company for not redeeming a canceled warrant that has been presented to us. We've been successful in defending these in court. However, we feel that having a more specific provision in statute may head off some of these claims in the future. There is similar language in law under Minnesota Statute 16A.46. However, that statute relates to lost or destroyed warrants and does not specifically address the situation where a warrant is simply void without reissuing a duplicate. And finally, Sections 17 and 18 clarify the roles and responsibilities of MMB for state agencies for accounting and collecting debts owed to the state. I'm happy to stand for questions.
Well, thank you, Mr. Pollard. Talk to me a little bit more about the Section 4. So can you give me some examples on that?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, so right now, Minnesota Statute 16.05 allows us to make prepayments on things that we can get a discount. The best example that somebody offered to me was IT hosting. Oftentimes when we go to do business with a vendor, if we are able to pay in advance, they will give us a discount for the state, which I think we all understand. We have found some instances where our statute is unclear about some particular services that we think we could get a discounted rate if we paid in advance. Some of those examples would be memberships, cell phone service, or lodging. That being said, MMB needs to approve those prepayments before they're being made, and we take several things into consideration. Is it a customary practice for that type of purchase? What are the risks to the state? Is the vendor well-established? Things of that nature. So it gives us a little flexibility in order to try and get services offered at a discount.
Ms. Roberts, how does this get recorded then when they're making a prepayment on the budget books? Do you know, or Mr. Pollard, maybe you know how that works, or how does that work? Do you know, Mr. Pollard? He doesn't look like he does.
Colin Roberts doesn't know. I don't know.
Okay, then I'm sure that's a good question.
Okay,
I can certainly.
Will you guys get back to me, Mr. Pollard? That'd be great. And then just curious on Section 17. Talk to me a little bit about that more.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The main technical change here is that it clarifies in statute that the Department of Revenue is responsible for collecting revenues while MMB does the reconciliation of accounts. It's just a technical change in that it's a little ambiguous into whose role is what. I think we all understand what revenue's role is versus what MMB's role is, and we just wanted to clarify that.
Okay. All right. And members, any other questions on this? Representative Vogel, I should ask, is there anybody that wants to testify on this bill? Okay. And Representative Nash?
Madam Chair, thank you for your indulgence. It's not to this bill, but Mr. Pollard, I saw you here, and I wanted to make sure why I asked the question. A couple weeks ago, you were here. We were talking about gain sharing. We had asked for some information regarding the gain sharing and haven't seen that back, and was wondering if you could give us a timeline that we should be able to expect it, because I know that's something that both Representative Vogel, myself, the chair, and many others had questions on. So if you could maybe give ideas on when we'd see that.
Pollard.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Nash, thank you for the question. To that request from committee, I think it was last week, maybe the week before, we are working on that. It's taken us a little bit more time than we had hoped, simply because we're collecting that data from all of the agencies, boards, and commissions, and so we're trying to do our best to bring all of that together. But it is still on our to-do list for the committee, among many other things.
Representative Nash?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okie dokes. All right. With that, Representative Vogel, did you have last comments, though?
Nothing more, Madam Chair.
Okay. I'm going to renew my – or you're going to renew your motion.
I'll renew my motion to have it held over for possible inclusion.
In the state government finance bill. That's perfect. Thank you, folks. I think that is it for bills. I do want to remind members we are going to have a hearing on Friday to go over the bonding bills that have been referred to our committee. And so we're going to start at 9. And if you're ready to rock and roll, we'll try and get you out of here so you can get back to your business in your districts. And with that, members, we are adjourned.